listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
And given recent incidences in my family, I was talking to someone I consider a dear friend, Dave Gaheri. And anyway, we were chatting this past week, and he told me about an incident that he experienced. He is our guest the last hour. He is the co-author of Erasing the Liberty, with Phil Turney, and the producer of the future full-length film about Israel's attack on the USS Liberty. And his websites are erasingtheliberty.com and usslibertymovie.com. But today we're not going to be talking about the USS Liberty. We're going to be talking about his near-death experience, which has a special significance for me at this time. So welcome, Dave.
Deanna, great to be here, although, of course, in light of the events, it's a sad time for me, and of course, knowing you and knowing what you're going through, and I hope that what I have to say is uplifting to you and some of the listeners.
This morning I was sitting at my desk, and I start thinking about things, and I start bawling my head off, and I thought, what am I thinking? I'm going to do a radio program today? How am I ever going to do this? And so I'm just so grateful that you're on the program and talking about this. And, anyway, tell us when and how this happened, your experience.
Sure. I was in a really bad accident when I was in the Navy. I was active duty in the Navy, serving aboard a nuclear, powered fast attack submarine. I was stationed in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, and this was in 1982, in November of 1982, when I got into a very, very horrific accident, and I died. And I was told that just by chance, a Navy corpsman happened to come by and resuscitate me. But from what I was told and from what I experienced, I was dead, which they call an NDE, a near-death experience, for a little bit of time before I was brought back. And while I was dead, or close to death, or however you would call it, and it happens to people all the time, they're brought back, and people have various stories to tell about what they experienced, and many of them are similar. And what the reason that I know that it wasn't a dream was because I wasn't able to dream for about 2 months after the accident. And it happened right at that exact time. And I don't think that I would be dreaming about something that I experienced without knowing what I should be seeing. And so what happened was, and it was very quick, but it was very revealing, and it understandably has given me a different outlook on life here on Earth. And what happened was that at the time of my accident, I only had one member of my extended family that had passed on, and that was my maternal grandfather. And he was a nice guy, wasn't very talkative, you know, didn't really know him that well, but when we went to visit him and my grandma and all the cousins, and it was a big family, and he was always there, but he was not one of these type of grandfathers who would, you know, put his arm around you and go for a walk or, you know, take you fishing or something like that. He was just always smiling and just, you know, a man of very few words. He was in the Navy also during World War I. And I saw him, and he was standing there. I could see from his waist up, and he was wearing this sweater that he usually wore, or that I remembered him wearing more than once, like a cardigan type sweater, greenish type sweater. And the background was dark. It wasn't like when you hear people say that you see the light. It was dark, and he was just standing there, and he had this really relaxed look on his face, and he was smiling very calmly, and with his, I believe it was his right hand, which was held down lower, he was moving it, gesturing to come toward him, like he was welcoming me, or conversely telling me to come out. It's not your time, right? I have no idea, but he did that very slowly. His hand moved for what seemed like maybe about 6 to 8 times. And while he was doing that, the look on his face was very calm and relaxed and just peaceful. And I understood, I thought, his feelings at the time. And the feelings were just, to put it in words, I guess, how happy he was to see me, and everything's good. Everything's peaceful. And I think that that is a dimension, and that was it, actually. When that happened, that was it. So it was just that brief time that maybe lasted 20 to 30 seconds, it seemed, if I could use earthly time. But it appeared to me that that dimension, this other dimension, is a nonverbal dimension. It's not necessary to use words. So it's an advanced dimension where just the look on somebody's face will let you know what they're saying. And so this happened, obviously, it's coming up on 37 years ago. And it's something that has given me, I don't want to say an advantage, but a different way of looking at what happens when we're gone from here. And I certainly don't want to die. I'm not looking forward to it. But I think that because of the possibly rare, I don't know how many people have experienced this, but the possibly rare experience that I was able to take part in, I think that for people who are wondering, geez, is this it? And we live here, and some of us, a very small number of us, live better than everybody else. And then, you know, and many people have miserable lives. They're hungry. They don't have shelter. And then, you know, you're gone, and that's it. And I don't think that's the case. I think that there is something like a spirit or a soul, and that when our time is up here, whenever that is, because we don't know, I think, then we do go to that other dimension where we are with the people that we cared for and that cared for us. And I think that that's something that I don't know if it is, but I think it might be something that a lot of people would welcome to hear and might give them a little hope about what can many times seem like a hopeless situation in the things that we're dealing with here on Earth, the everyday things and the ups and downs, the tragedies like the one you just experienced, to mitigate the feelings that we have, knowing that, or at least me thinking that, there is something after this, and our lives actually mean something, and that there's another area we're going to go to, and there might be something after that. I don't know, and maybe that's something that people refer to as heaven, possibly.
And this person that resuscitated you, did you ask him what he experienced during the time that you were, that he felt that you were dead?
I did meet him and did hang out with him, but I don't think that I was in the frame of mind to ask those type of things. It was a difficult time after the accident, and I was in the hospital for 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah,
so
it was a bad one. And it was accompanied by a lot of pain. And
wow.
The pain actually is something that I still have, even after all that time. Fortunately, it doesn't surface as often as it used to, because this pain is the type of pain that would make you want to, because it has done this to me, grab a gun and blow off your foot or your leg.
Right, and that's why sometimes you use a cane.
No, that just was, and I don't know if that was when I broke my leg, my ankle, by slipping on ice when I was living in New Jersey, mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons that we left. But that might have been that, or sometimes I have back issues.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's from the accident, no, generally I don't use a cane, but the pain is just, it's always there, but it surfaces sometimes in a violent way, and I don't know what, I can never figure out why it does that, you know, what instigates it to come out the way it does, but it's pretty bad. So at the time I wasn't really I was constantly grimacing and dealing with, you know, what I went through. So perhaps I should have asked him, but I think it was just a matter of him, you know, his training kicked in and he did what he was supposed to do and he resuscitated me.
Right. And you were very young, and obviously in the hospital for 6 months, it was a very serious thing.
Yes.
Most churches, teach that there's a heaven and there's a hell, and there are distinct places, and if you do something wrong, then you're going to go to hell. I believe in a loving intelligence, and I believe that that the spirit world is a dimension that is around us, that it isn't a place far away, but is just a dimension that we are not able to see, but we can experience, we can feel it. When my grandfather passed away, I often felt that he was that he accompanied me in the back of my car on many occasions, and in the past week, I have felt my daughter's presence, and I've talked to her, and I have a certain amount of comfort knowing, and I have talked to her, and a friend of mine said, I can envision Rebecca in a field of daisies, happy and pain free. My daughter has had, metastatic breast cancer for quite some time. She was diagnosed initially in 2009, and 3 years later, it returned, in her right lung. And, then it went to her liver, and she was in pain, constant pain. And in fact, I was talking to a friend just recently who called me, and he said that he was diagnosed with cancer, and that he had to have a pump implanted in his stomach, which you press to release morphine. It's very uncomfortable, and he was on oxygen, and that was how Rebecca was, and it was very difficult to see her in pain, but and she was given 2 weeks to live at Christmas time. And, she passed away on the 8th of this month. And we had all this time, more time than we anticipated. And, which I'm so grateful for. We did a lot of laughing. We watched some really crazy movies, Naked Gun with
Leslie Nielsen?
Yes, he was he was so funny. We laughed our heads off. And we've had some wonderful things happen, but no one is ever ready for a relative to leave. And sometimes you hate to see people suffer. Of course you hate to see people that you love suffer. And you don't want your people to suffer. You don't want to lose your children. Your children, your children should be burying you. It shouldn't be the other way around. But there is comfort in knowing, as I've read some of the stories at a couple of the websites that I've just posted in the chat room, there's comfort in knowing that there is something after, that it isn't this endless, for instance, if you do something bad. I believe that loving intelligence loves us all. He expects that we're going to make mistakes. He expects that we're going to exercise poor judgment from time to time. But he loves us in spite of those mistakes that we make. I believe that there are, okay, we are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
Alrighty, welcome back. Welcome back. This is Dan, and we're talking about, we're talking about death. And of course I think about, the way that I was, the way that my previous church, talked about, death and it was really, gave you the idea that, oh, if you make one tiny mistake or if you do this or if you do that, as a matter of controlling behavior. And, I just have a whole different perspective on things, than I used to. And it's a much more loving experience, a much more loving feeling that I have rather than, churches. I think the 501c3s, you're living out of fear of what is going to happen to you when you perish, rather than knowing that you are loved, that there is something after one dies, and your experience plus the experience of other people give people hope. They give people hope that there is something more, something tangible, and I believe in a different dimension, but right here, right? I don't believe you're going to another planet or to, the hellfires, brimstone and all that stuff, but it's just a different dimension that is right here on the earth in our midst. Now, after this experience, and after you recovered, after 6 months, did your experience help you to view things in a different way, that gave you, well, how did your experience change you?
Well, I think the most obvious way it did is it gave me that insight that because of how the experience unfolded, it wasn't something that I said, oh geez, could that have happened? Or was that, am I just imagining it? I know it happened. So because of that, I'm confident that there is something after this. And so not that I think about it daily, which I don't really think about it, but I think that it's something that I guess, you know, if you get a cut and you've got a scar from, you know, literally or figuratively, you know, a physical or an emotional scar, you know, that's part of you. And you walk around with that and it makes you who you are at that particular time. And I was young, like you said, I was 22. And so I've been living with that knowledge that it's not just here, you know, it's a multi-dimensional thing. So I think that although it's not something that I think about regularly, I brought it up to you because of what happened. I think that it's a part of my fabric. And so perhaps it has an impact on me in the way that I look at things and that I'm half in this world or half in another world or dimension, but I kind of have that knowledge that, like I said, other people don't have, and that it's okay. Things aren't just here and they're not that bad. And I'm speaking relatively from a position of comfort, you know, where I can eat every day and I can take a shower and get medical care if I need it. And as I mentioned earlier, most people in the world can't. You know, they're living, you know, wretched lives.
Right.
And so from my perspective only, or from a more Western outlook, I could say that, you know, it's given me another dimension where if before I was more unidimensional in reference to, I guess there's a term for it, existentialism or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Here now it's not one dimensional, maybe it's two dimensional. And I'm sure there are people who have experienced something similar or something even more eye opening, but it's actually a good feeling. And not that I'm glad that it happened, but as far as the accident, I mean, but it's a good feeling knowing that there is something, there's definitely something after this life, and it's good.
And we've talked recently too about, when you, met Lenny Posner and, you altered your opinion. And I have thought a lot about those children, since then. And I have made the comparison, gosh, how these parents must feel with, their little 6 and 7 year old children, leaving in such a horrific, frightening, horrid way. And, how they must feel. And hopefully those parents will have a sense of the idea that their children are not here any longer, but they're somewhere. And I understand that a couple of the parents have actually committed suicide, which is a very tragic thing. But I've made comparisons to people who have perished in warfare, and there's so much war and so much turmoil on the earth, and the idea that there's a place of peace and where one does not experience the turmoil and the hatred and the things that we are experiencing now. So that gives one a sense of just being able to understand that there are things that you can be afraid of, and things that we've been taught to fear probably our entire lives, that we needn't fear anymore. But the separation is I guess the very painful thing. And we will take your calls. We will take calls from the listeners at 800-313-9443. This is a very sensitive subject. And when I was sitting here in my office this morning thinking about the program and wondering how am I ever going to get through this? How can I do this? Because since the 8th, if I stay really busy and do a lot of busy work, it's fine. But if I have moments, particularly when I'm driving in the car, when I have moments when I'm not doing anything, when I'm not occupying my mind with busy work or doing, which I've been doing a lot of, just trying to stay busy, then it hits me. And there's no stopping the pain that I feel. And I know that there are a lot of people who have lost relatives. I remember how I felt when my mother died. I didn't shed a tear when my mother died. The only thing that I felt when my mother passed was, gosh, I wish we'd had a better relationship. But I didn't shed any tears. And as it happened, Rebecca and I flew out, and we rented a car, and we attended the funeral. And I never shed a tear, never shed a tear. And so I also think that it's the relationship that you have with people determines the amount of sadness that you feel when that person, I hate to say the word die, because it's such we use words like, oh, they passed, or they perished, but it's hard to say dead.
Yeah, maybe made the transition.
And that's the word I've been using. Transition is such a wonderful word to use, because it's not a final thing. It doesn't make it final. It just means, and that's the word I've been trying to use, it just means they've transitioned from this dimension to another dimension, and that they're still here. And I have really felt her presence in various places. And it's been interesting. There were times when she was she was incredible. Sometimes she would be the mother and she would be giving me counsel, and sometimes I would be the mother and I would give her counsel. She was an incredible, just a very talented person. She got her first piano when she was 6, and she took lessons starting when she was 6, and she could pick up any instrument without ever having played it before and play it. She played the violin, she played the clarinet, she taught herself how to play the organ, and she was just the most incredible individual that I have ever known. And I have often felt that we knew each other before, that this is not the first time that we have been related in some form or another, which has opened up a whole new belief for me this isn't the only time, this isn't the only time I've been on the earth, that maybe, and I've been told, that I have lived another life, and there's so much evidence of children who are born and they talk about, they identify with somebody else and they give names and they have scars where maybe they were shot or something. They have birthmarks where they were shot in a previous life. And it just opens up a whole new sphere of thinking about life in general. That maybe there are things that you didn't learn in one life, so you get a second chance to go through this progression where you maybe didn't learn learn something in one life. So you get a do-over, which seems like a wonderful thing. I don't think that we're always born, if one believes that we have lived before. I don't think that I would come back as a dog or something like that. I think that we always maintain, our human identity. But, it really gives me hope, and, it gives one something to think about that maybe, you hadn't thought about before. And I know, I lost my father, of course, and, grandparents, and, a lot of people, and to recognize that, hey, maybe this is not the end. Maybe this is just a transitioning. And your experience has also provided hope that, yes, this is not the end. This is just a transition. And someone shared, a listener shared this email. I hope I can get through this, but I do want to share it. It's by Mary Elizabeth Fry, and it says, "Do not stand by my grave and weep." Okay, it says, "Do not stand at my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. I am a thousand winds that blow. I am the diamond glints on snow. I am the sun on ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn rain. When you awaken in the morning's hush, I am the swift uplifting rush of quiet birds in circled flight. I am the soft stars that shine at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I did not die." Thanks to Greg for sharing that. And
that's nice.
It is a beautiful way of looking at something. And as I mentioned, in the Christian churches or in many churches, I think that there is this fear mongering that they use in order to require obedience or to generally make you fear to the point that you will, well, if you don't pay your tithing, if you don't do this, if you don't do that, then you're going to hell. Which is not the way that I think a loving intelligence, is. I do not think that is the way it is.
I got lucky in my church. You know, I went to a Baptist church and it was just like an extended family, really. They were just such nice people and there was none of that. So, I don't know. I mean, Baptists are usually, like you said, the hellfire and brimstone, but not here. It was just, like I said, you're hanging out with family members. So, I guess I got lucky.
That is wonderful. And our experiences and our upbringing do make us, cast fear into our hearts about things that really we need not be fearful of. And, it was just, my daughter was very intuitive, and, when she was 8, she decided, and she had courage. She had courage all of her life. And, anyway, it was time to go to a church meeting, and she just says, "I'm not going." She was 8 years old, and she had decided that there was something that she did not like, and so she just wasn't going to go. And so I said, "Oh, okay." And she was also very adventuresome. When we went shopping, if you let go of her hand, she'd be two flights up. She would take the escalator, and I'm talking when she was two or three. She had no fear.
Oh. Wow.
She would be up the escalator and be looking at things. It wasn't like she was trying to hide, or she was just curious. There was a time she decided that she would take off on her tricycle, and she rode clear around the block without any fear. She just wanted to see what was on the other side. And her brother, her older brother, and she were the best of friends. And they used to just, he used to watch over her, and he was her protector. And they were just, I dearly love spending time with them. And I remember when the husband, the person I was married to at the time, we decided that we would get rid of our television. And so we had these most wonderful visits to the library and to the lake. And I did not realize how much I had depended on the TV to babysit the children. And so after we got rid of the television, we spent so much precious time together. And I'm so, so grateful that I have this precious time with this very, very beautiful person that has not left. She's just in another dimension. And I remember that she loves animals, absolutely adores animals. And I was talking yesterday, I was over at her house, and I was talking to her dog, and I believe that her dog saw her, and I was talking to the dog and explaining, and the dog was listening. I know that she was there. We had a little get together, and I know she was there. She has the most gorgeous, beautiful backyard. It's like a sanctuary with huge trees, and you just feel like there's a presence there in that backyard that if she were going to be anywhere, that backyard would be the place that she would be. And she's the one that really picked out their house. And this yard has huge, huge trees. And there's nobody living behind. It's a school that's behind. And so it's just a lot of trees. And there's a lot of birds and a lot of flowers. And it's just this beautiful, beautiful sanctuary. And when she was sick, there were a couple times that we would go out into the backyard, and I would take off my shoes, and I would. She couldn't do a lot of things because of her illness, and I would do these energy medicine things, and it was called Connecting Heaven and Earth, is the exercise that I do in her backyard. And it just, connecting heaven and earth, it just seems like heaven and earth are all in one place. And her backyard seems to be where that connection of heaven and earth exists. And she always loved her animals, and she loved everybody. And she has so many friends. She did so many things. She started a book club in her neighborhood. When she was sick, after she was diagnosed, and when she was sick, she would go over to the neighbors and watch the little girl so that her neighbor could go and pick up her other child from school. Rebecca was sick. She was terminal. But it didn't matter whether she was sick or not. She always put other people first. She was such a loving, giving individual that people just wanted to connect to that energy. Even though her body was failing, her spirit was so strong that it just captivated people. And
why is it that always the good suffer and they go before those who perhaps should?
And you know, it isn't that God needs them. It's just things happen to people. Things happen to our bodies. Our bodies are, you know, things happen. And we have a lot of stresses in our life. We have so many things going on. 5G, and we've got all these things that are happening to us, at the hands of other people. But the people that you love, even though they're not present, even though we don't see them every day, and I had the opportunity of seeing her and spending precious time with her. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I was sharing stories about Rebecca and about how her transition has and the time that I the last since Christmas when she was given 2 weeks to live. And I was really upset that her doctor said, "Oh, you've got 2 weeks to live." I just don't think that doctors should tell their patients that, because and she sure showed him. See, that's Rebecca. She wasn't going to believe that doctor. She was going to do what she wanted to do. She didn't want to go to church when she was 8. She didn't go to church. Okay? And she wasn't going to transition when the doctor thought that it was her time to transition. So anyway, I am grateful for that time, and Dave, I'm grateful that I had you to share my experience with. And grateful that you told me about your experience and how it just gave me, it confirmed what I believed. As I've said, I've been talking to her since the 8th as if she were still here, because she really is. I have felt her presence, and I have felt her love. And I know that she has felt mine. And I know that we will see each other. And as my friend said, I can see her running through the fields, a field filled with daisies. And I believe that she is now free from the encumbrances of her sick body, and she could be, and her spirit could now do what she had always done, is be free to go up the escalator, or ride her tricycle around the block, or pick up a musical instrument and play it just because she wanted to, and not because she'd been trained to. She, and I've often told her husband, who I love dearly, her husband Chris, that she, not because she is my daughter, but because of who she was. She is one of the most remarkable individuals that I've ever had the pleasure of knowing and loving and sharing time on this earth. And I do anticipate that I will see her and we will embrace and our relationship will continue. It will flourish. And your story and the other stories that I have read, give me that hope. And she is not gone. She's simply transitioned. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
Alrighty. Bye-bye, listeners. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.